This is Miff Warhurst on ABC Radio.
Here's a stat that really surprised me. More than 50% of Australians were either born or have a parent who was born overseas. That's more than half. And apparently we reached this milestone sometime last year, and there wasn't much great fanfare about these figures at all. And I'm interested, what do these figures say about who we are as Australians? Well, I have writer, journalist and specialist in all things facts and figures when it comes to this stuff, George Megalogenis, who says it means way much more than just being diverse. George, thanks for joining us.
Miff, how are you?
I'm good. I don't remember reading anything about this, these stats that say 50% of Australians were either born or have a parent who was born overseas. Why didn't we hear?
Yeah, there was no official release. You had to do the sums to find it out. But I wonder whether, say, in the media, things are going so quickly that something that epic gets missed because the assumption is it's either going to happen or it's already happened and nobody bothered to check on the day when the latest stats came out.
Would there be a reason, though, why people would be ignoring these kind of figures?
I just assume that there's too much else going on.
Nothing.
Oh, back in the day, look, I was a newspaper journalist for a fair while at The Australian. I'm sure I would have written it.
Yeah, that's true.
At the time. I'm probably the only one who cared that much about it.
I think a lot of people would care when they know the numbers. It's not the first time, though, in Australia's history that this has happened.
Yes.
If you think through,
I mean, we've just come off the Australia Day debate, and I don't really want to get into that one if we can avoid it. If you think through the colonial era, pretty much what you have is a whole lot of colonies starting as these majority migrant settlements. And then as the kids and then the grandkids start to overwhelm the old population, we become Australian as we understand Australian in the contemporary sense, not in the Indigenous sense, but just in the sort of offspring of migrant sense. But as recently, in a weird way, as recently as the 1890s, so well over 100 years of European settlement in Australia, the entire continent was majority migrant, i.e. first or second generation migrant. And places like Queensland and WA were the last to go majority Australian born. A majority native, I think, as they used to call it in those days. It's not a term we'd use today.
No.
So we rolled into Federation with just under a quarter of the population born overseas and around 20% second generation, the Australian-born kids of migrants. So we're about 40-45%. And that number kept falling. And by the end of the Second World War, when we'd really closed ourselves off to the world for about 50 years, we were at 20% total. 10% overseas born, and another 10% who had a migrant who was a parent, or just under 20%. So we were a long way white by the end of the Second World War, and then we opened the doors again after the Second World War. And that number's been creeping up, but it's really kicked off in the last 15 years. And I think this is probably the thing that's taken people by surprise. It's really leapt in the last 15 years because our total immigration numbers are doubled.
So who are we now? What are we made up of?
Is
it still predominantly white in that England and New Zealand provide most of our immigration, or is that changing too?
Yeah, this is a good question. So the headline figure the last 20 years, the two biggest groups, new arrivals, so they've added to their total population, so new arrivals exceed deaths or departures. The Chinese and the Indians, just under 500,000 each have arrived from China and India since 1997. The next biggest group after that, the Philippines, the next biggest group are the New Zealanders, a bit over 200,000, and the Philippines, a bit over 100,000. So they're the top four in terms of new arrivals. But the largest immigrant community in Australia today is still the English. But most of it is a carryover from the post-war period, you know, the 10-pound Poms. Now, the English at the turn of the 21st century were the number one group everywhere. So it didn't matter whether you're in a high migration zone or a low migration zone. Melbourne, Sydney, the very north of Queensland or the deep outback. The English would have been the largest immigrant community in your area. So it meant that even if you didn't have many migrants in your area, Australia was familiar to you. So the national ethnic ladder was the regional ethnic ladder. So across the country in 2001, and we'll just look at the capitals for the moment, every capital has the English at number one and the Kiwis at number two. In Melbourne and in Adelaide, a bit of outliers, the Italians were still number two in Melbourne and Adelaide.
Surely the Greek community would be...
Yeah, we're still in the top five in Melbourne in 2001, but our numbers were, the Greeks stopped coming to Australia, like the Europeans generally stopped coming to Australia in the early 70s. Because we really pretty much tapped out that post-war migration wave, the first one from Southern Europe in the early 70s. And then it was sort of New Zealand and Vietnamese. They were sort of the next waves. And as I'm sort of alluding, it didn't matter if it was a big wave or a small wave. It all moved in the same direction. So the big switch, and this is the thing that it surprised me when I checked this data out, because I've been studying this stuff for a long time, and you tend to see patterns that repeat, and now you've got a break, like a break in the wave. One part of it is going to Melbourne, Sydney, and to a lesser extent, Canberra, and that's the Chinese and Indians. The Chinese and Indians concentrate in Melbourne and Sydney. So 75% of all the Chinese born in Australia are just in the two biggest cities. 75%, right? Melbourne and Sydney are 40% of the national population, so we're oversubscribed for Chinese. And the same goes with the Indians. 64% of the population, 64% of the Indian population in Australia is in Melbourne and Sydney, but nationally we're 40% of the population. So these are big things. And that's led to the thing that surprised me most. No two capital cities look the same today. Capital cities. Forget about the rest of the regions. No two capital cities in Australia look the same today. So in Melbourne, we'll go back a step. We start with a national picture. English is still the largest immigrant group across the country, and the Kiwis are number two. In Melbourne, it's the Indians number one. In Sydney, it's the Chinese number one. In Brisbane, it's the Kiwis number one. So that's just the eastern seaboard. Sorry.
This is fascinating. Yeah. George Megalogenis is my guest, journalist and writer. We're talking about the changing face of Australia. We're still just looking at cities, though.
Yeah.
And we will get to the regions, because I think there's
a
different
story as
well. I think
that's very important. Probably the most important part of the story is the regions, yeah.
All right. With all this in mind, how do we define what Australia is then, if the cities all represent different majorities in communities? And are we attempting to redefine Australia given these numbers, or are we shying away from it?
Just on ethnicity, so it's 50% national, first or second generation. It's more than 50%. It's more than 60% in Melbourne and Sydney. But it's less than 50% in Brizzy. It's more than 60% in Perth. It's less than 50% in Hobart. It's barely 40% in Hobart. So you've got big shifts now between capitals and also between capitals and regions. One of the ways to look at it is Australia is now big enough to be diverse, genuinely diverse. For different parts of Australia, it'll look completely different. You know, the way the United States is. So the United States is many countries. We're still only six states and two territories, but we are now literally three different ethnic faces we've got now. Southeast, I'd say, is Eurasian now. It's not Anglo-Celtic, it's not Anglo-European, it's Eurasian, so Asian and European. The North is very interesting. So Queensland's very interesting because the Kiwis are by far the largest group. You'd have to say that's a Pacific identity forming in the north of Australia. Head west, it's very Anglo. So most of the new arrivals from England tend to cluster in Perth. One of the reasons, so Tim Winton told me this, and he may not want me to double quote him, because he did tell me later in one evening, it wasn't during the day. I asked him, why are there so many POMs in Perth? And he suspects that there's this 80s, 90s thing that occurred in England where people used to watch Neighbours. And the part of Australia that most looked like the set of Neighbours in the 80s and 90s was Perth.
Is that right?
That's his theory. Economically, it's also mining booms, has a particular skill set, accountants, engineers and the like. But, yeah, apparently Perth looks more like England than England does today.
It's fascinating.
They're the three zones. So Anglo in the west, Pacific in the north, Eurasian in the southeast. How do you hold that together? Very interesting question.
Yeah.
You've got to have a big conversation about population.
Right.
And I think you're alluding to the regions. So the next big part of the story is
what's going on in the regions. Is this reflected in regional towns and in regional cities?
Yeah. So I had to stop looking at ethnicity, and I wanted to ask another question. Because in the regions are basically 30 years ago. The English are number one everywhere. And in some areas, the Greeks and the Italians are still high up, which means that it's the old migrant community hasn't been replaced by a new migrant community. But the difficulty in the regions now is these populations are aging, as the population across the country is aging. The cities are actually getting a new arrival from overseas to, in a sense, slow the ageing process. But in the regions, you're not getting the migrant to replace the young person who leaves to go to town or go to the city, or the retiree who moves into the region. So there's one, I'll give you one example, which is Melbourne versus Geelong. So Melbourne and Geelong in 2001 didn't look similar. They did in ethnicity, and they sort of looked similar in terms of age. You know, there were more kids aged 0 to 14 than there were people aged 65 and over. Now, in a number of suburbs in Melbourne today are younger than they were in 2001. And that is not because they've got more kids. It's because they've got more skilled migrants. And so the proportion of the population that's aged 65 and over has actually fallen. And that's the inner city of Melbourne. And you look around the inner city of Melbourne, you know that that's the story. It's basically full of students, which is a good thing. And also the inner south of Melbourne. But other parts of Victoria, and Geelong is almost ready to reach this tipping point as well, are in a situation now where the retirees, those aged 65 and older, now outnumber the kids. So you get an accelerated ageing in the regions, and you get some parts of Australia, especially in the cities of Melbourne, Sydney, and to a lesser extent Brisbane, that are actually younger. So when you start getting those separations between youth and ageing, you are in uncharted waters in Australia. This hasn't happened to us before.
And what sort of problems does this bring up?
The thing is, it actually accelerates the ageing. So if you're in an area where the over 65s outnumber the 0 to 14s, it means a lot of your economic energy is redirected away from schooling and away from sort of property and construction to aged care. And so your labour force starts to skew towards care. That means a lot of young kids, even if there's a regional campus, a tertiary campus they're going
leave.
To, they're not going to hang around.
They'll still leave.
They'll still leave. Now, the way I sort of explain the ageing process and the acceleration of the ageing in the regions, kids leave, skilled migrants don't come in their place. Retirees move in from the cities. It's why the cities stay younger and why the region's getting older. I think we really have to think differently about this debate in the future. Population is not a question about sticking handcuffs on migrants and making them go here or there or cutting that number. Population is really about making sure your cities stay connected to your regions.
Yeah.
And people are able to move between.
So, George, I am talking to George Megalogenis, who has written a fascinating piece on the changing face of Australia. If this is the case, what do we need to do? Is this why you love doing what you do, because you can see a problem and have some options on how we can fix it?
Yeah, I'd actually like to do a TV show on this, to be honest, without pitching to the ABC. I think there's a big series in this. There's a book in this, so it'll be my next book. One of the reasons I think we need to think about it this way, which is how do you slow the ageing process across the country rather than letting one part of the country get prematurely old and the other part of the country stays young and vibrant. So when the rest of the world looks at Australia and sees Melbourne and Sydney, these two super global cities, big tick for the country. But within our country now, there's big inequality, threatening, and a very difficult story to put back together again if it gets out of control. So the way I look at this, the infrastructure question is the first question you have to answer. You have to have high-speed rail connecting the capitals to the regions. One of the reasons is to give people the choice to stay in the regions and come and commute to work in the city. And it's also an opportunity for people to leave the cities, if the property market pushes them out, to be able to live in the regions and commute back to the cities. Now, most of the development theory tells you that if you could stick a university campus in a regional area, you attract young kids. You get the services that build in and around young kids, so your cafes and the like, the place starts to take off and then people want to move in. People want to settle down and have kids there. It's actually, on the data that I've looked, it's actually very difficult to maintain that story even if you have a regional campus if you're stuck in an area that in the long run doesn't have job prospects. And just an hour down the road or 2 hours down the road is this city offering you a lot. Offering you the world, in a sense. So that's the thing I'm looking for now. I'm just hoping the conversation switches away from beating up on the migrant. And in fact, don't beat up on us anymore. We're the majority now. So I'm a kid of Greek immigrants. So for the first time in my life, I'm actually technically part of the Australian majority, which is a bit of a spit out. Stop beating up on the migrants. Stop trying to play this person off against that person. Think more strategically about how to keep the hold the country together, in a sense raising the opportunity for the rest of the country.
George Megalogenis, you've raised a lot of questions for us and given us a lot of figures, and I'm very impressed that you did all of it without looking at your notes once. How do you remember all this stuff?
I'm a nerd. Unfortunately, I'm a nerd. It's one of my burdens.
Well, it's brilliant. And, yeah, certainly raised a lot of questions for us. If you'd like to read the article, it's called Australia Rising, Who Are We Becoming? And you should be able to find it if you do a search. George Megalogenis, thank you.
Miff, thank you very much.
Miff Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.